welcome to the NC Students Podcast. NC Students is the middle school and high school ministry of Northland Cathedral in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information on NC Students and Northland Cathedral, please visit www.northlandcathedral.org. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy this week's message.
Listen, let me ask this question for you guys, because I don't have a great answer for myself. I don't have a great story. I love to start a message with a funny story about my kids, but my kids aren't here. I don't even know that I have a great story. Maybe I just blocked out. But, like, you hear horror stories about first dates, and some of you guys are in relationships, and some of you guys have had them, or maybe you haven't had them, but you still hear stories that are funny or disasters. But I know that just thinking about this, anyone here about a disastrous first date? Yeah? I was watching a video, and they were talking about funny first dates, and this girl was, like, trying to get out of a first date, and she's like, you know, I don't feel so good. And she's trying to go home, and the guy leans over at first date and kisses her and says, well, now I know you feel better. Terrible idea. Don't do that, guys. I mean, there are ways to kill first dates, but I know this is for sure. There's a whole lot of stress, and there's a whole lot of pressure that first time you go, and there's certain kind of restaurants that you can eat at on a first date, and there's certain things you can't. Am I right on that one? Or is it just me? I'm pretty sure you can't, like, go on a first date to, like, a big bowl of soup, like Vietnamese pho, which is that big noodle soup. Like, so, what do you do? Where do you go to school? What are your interests? You know, I mean, that's just not one of that first date material. That's kind of like, you know, you get to know each other and you kind of get beyond a certain barrier. I mean, I think this is a terrible measurement of, like, how a relationship is progressing. It's so crass. But when you pass gas, it's like, well, we've crossed some sort of barrier. I don't know what barrier that is. Maybe you've never done that with the significant other. That's cool. There's still more to go. So there are certain things when you're first kind of together, you want to present your best foot forward. And there's a lot of excitement and a lot of energy, but a lot of it is like, man, I don't want to look dumb. I don't want to look foolish. I'm going to make sure I minimize the weird stuff about me and maximize the, like, good stuff about me, the attractive stuff about me. Am I correct? Or is that how that works? Or do you kind of go on first date and say, here's all my garbage, and let me let you know what you're not going to like about me. Let's get it out of the way. That's pretty much how that works. And I was thinking about this whole first date, how you act and how you present yourself. And I thought, golly, I wonder if maybe in the church we are on, like, this long, continuous first date with each other. Not in a romantic way, but, like, we're always kind of putting our best foot forward and minimizing the bad stuff, afraid that maybe if they get to know who we are in the church, I don't know where we learn this. We talk about Jesus washing away our sins and loving us for who we are, but yet we interact with everybody almost like I'm afraid that they'll really get to know who I am, and maybe once they do that, they won't like me. So we learn to kind of present and hide certain things, accentuate and underplay certain things. Am I correct on this? And let me be honest with you, a continuous first date with all the excitement of a real first date, but if you're on a continuous first date and all that stress, it becomes taxing and exhausting. And I don't know about you, but when I sat where you guys sat in my youth ministry, or even as an adult, when I get into this mode of having to kind of put on a face, and what's funny is we don't like anyone who's fake. Nobody says, man, I love people who are phony. If you love people who are phony, raise your hand. Like Rafi does. We don't like people who are fake. But yet, for some reason, we kind of feel this impulse that we have to put on a face. We have to kind of put on a show to make sure everyone sees our good stuff. We don't like people who are fake, but for some reason, we can't get out of the fact that we feel that we're supposed to, at least not totally deception, but at least accentuate, emphasize. Because people are watching, what will people think? What will people think of me if they really get to know me and my issues and my stuff? Are we on a continuous first date? Because here's the problem. When you do that, I swear you get wore out and tired. And if you're a church kid, you guys know this. That we begin to think that good behavior is what it means to be a Christian. And if it's good behavior, that means what it means to be a Christian. The reality is that we fail and fail and fail at good behavior. And we get tired of failing. We feel like a failure. We feel like a fake. And so we have to come and be like, hey, everyone, look at me. I'm doing really good. And that's kind of that hiding, not being truthful, kind of that I'm holding people at arm's length because I don't want them to really know me. And it becomes exhausting. It becomes tiresome. And for some of you, you know exactly what that's like. Like, man, my real friends know me. They're at school. They're on my sports team. And I could be myself. But here, I feel like I have to be somebody else. I'd hate that to be the position you're in. I don't want to be in that position. Where does that come from? Because some of us, if you've been in this a long time and you've seen people who put on a good face in one place and you'll see it in a really bad spot, and you're like, wait a minute, maybe there is something to like this idea that my friends say they're hypocrites in the church. And I know my family even, they act way better at church than they do at home. So I wonder if there are people who are saying, I don't know if I'm, maybe I have questions about faith. Because it seems like people are fake. And the sad thing is the people who are fake and phony, it's not just bad people, it's all of us with our good intentions, trying to be good Christians, trying to live this life out, but recognizing there's this weird unwritten pressure. Maybe you're not even a Christian, maybe you're just kind of here saying, I don't even believe this stuff, because that's exactly why, Jerome. Because there are people, and all my friends told me, you go to that youth group, they're all kind of hypocrites. And maybe you're like, I don't know, I'm interested in God, but I see Christian people act not in great ways. Aren't we supposed to all, you ever hear that? How can you act that way as a Christian? You hear that, right? But what's that way? But the essential part of being a Christian is the fact that we need grace, that the good news is that we are sinners, we have fallen short, and by the grace of God, we put our trust in Him, and we are Christians. So I'm not quite sure what that is, but all I know is for some of us, the good news doesn't feel very good. And we're tired. And if you're not, maybe you know someone who is. Maybe you know people who struggle with faith because they think that they can't perform. You're fatigued having to perform for others. If you have your Bibles, I want to just point to a passage of Scripture that I believe when we talk about owning it, is all about owning it. We've talked about owning our faith. We've talked about owning the church last week. Today we're going to talk about owning our faults, our mistakes, owning our sin, owning our shortcomings, owning the terrible state of our heart. What does it look like to own it? Because I'm convinced that if we would actually own it, that we could experience Christian life in a way that we never have. I know when we're little, we're taught, Jesus loves me and I should act good. But let me tell you, young people, it's beyond that. As a matter of fact, I'm fearful that perhaps the good behavior thing has made us kind of miss the point. Read with me Psalm chapter 32. There is good news. This is David. David, who we all know, most of us know, there was ups and downs with David. There was moments where he was obedient, and there was moments where he messed up big. Psalm chapter 32, Psalm of David. I don't usually preach out of Psalms, but I think this is a great one. Oh, what joy for those whose disobedience is forgiven, whose sin is put out of sight. Yes, what joy for those who record, whose record the Lord has cleared of guilt, and whose lives are lived in complete honesty. The next slide says joy, and it shows you just kind of what verses 1 and 2 said. There's joy for those who've received forgiveness. There are joy for those when sin is out of sight. There's joy when we are cleared of guilt. Those are all kind of related to what Jesus Christ has done. This is before Jesus was walking on the face of the earth, before he came down and died on the cross, but everything points and whispers to him. There was forgiveness in the Old Testament. And how much more now? He's saying when we are forgiven people, there is joy. And the last part of verse 2 says this, that there's joy when we live a life in honesty. When we're honest with ourselves, when we own our sin, when we own that we need grace. You can't receive forgiveness unless you actually admit to fault and failure. This whole thing is built upon admitting to fault and failure and not being able to do it ourselves. And yet once we get in, we stop kind of admitting those things. Kind of PRing ourselves. Keep reading verses 3 through 4. When I refused to confess my sin, my body wasted away. And I groaned all day long. Day and night, your hand of discipline was heavy on me. My strength evaporated like water in the summer's heat. The next slide says that. It says this, it says that there's pain. Did you see it? When I refuse to confess my sin, there is pain. There's physical pain. There's emotional pain. There's emotional pain. Did I say mental and emotional? Yeah, that's what I wrote. There's pain when we hold things in. And here's the funny thing about that. We think sometimes that we got to act like good Christians and everyone sees it. But on the inside, we're weighed down with guilt and shame. And it seems like everyone else gets it together. And we're trying to hold it together the best we can. And what's funny is when we live that game and play that game, what happens if somebody else messes up? We almost become judgmental. You want to know where some people think we're judgmental? It's because we are. When somebody messes up, and we're holding our stuff together the best we can, even though we can't do it really that good, but we're doing it better than that guy, we're like, what's wrong with him? He can't hold his stuff together. I mean, this is crazy. There's pain in all this. And what's funny about this, you guys know that sin actually thrives in isolation. We're afraid to let people in and to say, here's what's going on, God. We don't even deal honestly with ourselves. And so we hold on to our struggles, and we think we're doing the noble right thing for the Lord, but what we're doing is we're actually kind of keeping him kind of arm's length. Sin thrives in isolation. When nobody knows what you're doing, it's a whole lot easier to keep doing it. But the reverse is true. Keep reading. We're going to keep reading. Verse 5, check this out. In verse 5, finally, I confessed all my sins to you and stopped trying to hide my guilt. So David has pretty much said, I tried this whole holding it together. I tried putting my best foot forward. I tried justifying myself. Ooh, I'm not going to meddle. We're going to get there in a moment about how we justify ourselves. Finally, I confessed all of my sin to you. I stopped trying to hide my guilt. I said to myself, I will confess my rebellion to the Lord, and you forgave me. All of my guilt is gone. If you guys remember from verse 1, there's joy for those who are forgiven. And he says, I confessed and I was forgiven. So put them together. There's confession, there's forgiveness, and then there's joy. He said, finally, when I stopped hiding, when I started dealing honestly with God and with myself, because you can't deal honestly with God unless you deal honestly with yourself, then you forgave me. There wasn't a forgiveness that was conditional upon how he acted or cleaned up his life. It was, I confessed. I fessed up. I was honest with you, God, and I received forgiveness. We know on this side of Calvary that our forgiveness comes when we put our trust in Jesus and what he did. But I want you to see something really quick, because here's this might change this entire message for you. When he says, I will confess my rebellion. See, so far I've said words like sin, and you guys are thinking about bad behavior. You're thinking about pornography or partying or lying or anger. But let me tell you what, sin is so much deeper than bad behavior. Bad behavior is what flows out of the sin that dwells in our heart. When he says, my rebellion, he's not talking about my rebellious actions. He's talking about my rebellious heart. We are so far from God the moment we were born. Selfish, angry, bitter, jealous. And because of those things that exist in our heart, we actually do those bad behavior things. And sometimes we do things that don't even look like bad behavior, but they flow from the sin that's in our heart. Man, sin is so much deeper than bad. Don't ever walk out of here and think that sin is bad actions. It's a heart that's apart from God. It's a heart that's rebellious towards God's kingdom, that's trying to establish our own kingdom. So he says, when I finally confessed, you forgave me. And then he makes a call out, therefore, this kind of changes everything, therefore, let all the godly pray to you while there is still time, that they may not drown in the floodwaters of judgment. For you are my hiding place. You protect me from my trouble. You surround me with songs of victory. This thing finishes off with the Lord's respond, I will guide you, I will advise you, I will lead you. And I want you to go home and read that. But let me just stop here. This idea of our shelter, our protection is in him, not in our own righteousness, not in our own ability, because it's in trusting in God that we can stand before him because of what he's done for us, what Jesus Christ has done for us. It's very different than what we do. It's our own strategy to hide things, to minimize things. We put our security and our ability to play this game. Some of you want to play it and you're with all sincerity and you're tired, and some of you don't want to play it and you're angry. I don't know where you are today. Let me just say this, and this is the point of the message. How you handle your sin, whether you hide or deal honestly with it, how you handle your sin reveals how you think, and it reveals how good you think the good news really is. Because if the good news is really good news, guess what? We don't have to hide our sin. I'm not saying go out there and like shout it on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or Snapchat or whatever you guys use. I'm not saying go be crazy about confessing sin. Don't get me wrong. But this whole thing of hiding sin that we do, minimizing, excusing, justifying, if the good news is really good, we don't have to do that. We're free from that. Don't play that game. Because the good news is really good. Because the good news really is Jesus Christ died for my sins, not just when I first became a Christian, but my sins today, and continue to live a life where I will fall short and I'm in need of grace. That's the good news, and it's really good. And if it's not that good, then go ahead and do what you want to do, but you don't have to. You don't have to hide. You don't have to conceal and pretend and present something for other people. I'm just saying. The good news is good news. Let me just say, really what we're called to do is we're called to own it. That's the name of this entire sermon series. And I was thinking today about when we share our faith with people, we spend so much time as Christians like minimizing our faults and failures. We don't want anyone to really know how bad we are because we're afraid maybe we get rejected. But then we'll share our faith with somebody and we'll say, man, Jesus died for your sins and I'm a sinner too. And you live your whole life in front of that person who doesn't believe and they never hear you actually admit to being a sinner except for when you're trying to leverage your sinfulness for their, you know, in a witnessing testimony. I mean, you come across trying to leverage authenticity and transparency, but it's not really authentic. You're trying to use that for something. Man, live your life authentic before non-believers. I don't have it all together. I'm not better than you. Part of the reason people don't want to get preached at is because we think we're better than them. And if we really do think that, then we have a problem. But I'm going to tell you what, when you share your faith, there's something to be said when someone that you respect or look up to says, man, I don't have that down, or I've messed up there too. It's like, oh my gosh, I could stop pretending. You too? You guys have heard this. There's respected leaders in our youth ministry that you've spent some time with who've said, you know what, me too. I fall short, I mess up. And you're like, oh, that's so great to hear. Because I thought that I was the only one or something wrong with me. There's not. There's something to be said about being transparent, to being authentic, to owning it. No one would ever admit that they don't think the good news is good news, but the reality is our actions reveal it. From the very beginning of the church, this was the issue. As a matter of fact, the Apostle John writes in 1 John chapter 1, he says, and if anyone says they're without sin, they're lying, the truth isn't in them. But people were already saying it up front, like, oh man, I don't have sin. And there's a whole other thing that John was talking about, but it was worth writing that people were saying, hey, he's like, that's not the truth. The truth is, we all have sinned. We all fall short. My goal here today is not to beat you up over your sin. I haven't called out sins per se, and I haven't said you need to get better or change. My goal here is to say, just own it. Here's who I am. Well, what does it mean to own it? What it means to own it means to actually be honest. My heart is selfish. My heart is angry. My heart is jealous. Whatever it may be that causes those actions, that bad behavior we usually define as sin. But we got to be honest with ourselves. We got to be honest with God. We got to be honest with other people. You can't get honest with God or other people unless you're honest with yourselves. But we spend so much time justifying how in the world. I mean, like, think about this. Have you guys ever said, like, well, what am I supposed to do? I mean, did you hear what they said or did? Excusing our bad behavior because of somebody else. We're not honest with ourselves. We're shifting blame. We got to be honest with ourselves. We got to be honest with God. Because here's the deal with God. He already knows our sin. He already knows how we fall short. And so being honest with God is not like telling him something he doesn't know. But I think when we go to God and we say, God, I have messed up here and I missed it. I think what we're really doing is we're praying and calling out, God, I need grace. God, I need you to transform me, that I would grow and maybe do this better, but with the knowledge that you're going to still fall short. And then honest with each other, honest with others. Let me make this caveat, because I know how youth groups work. When I say we need to be honest with each other, I want to say be cautious, be wise. Find trusted people that you could walk with, that you can share with. Don't just blab to everybody, because not everyone's ready for that. That's a lot to lay on somebody. And I think sometimes we automatically go to a youth camp. Like, you know that moment at youth camp when everyone's like confessing and crying and it's a big, high emotional moment? I'm not recommending that. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. There's a time and place for that. But don't think that that's what I'm trying to preach here. Don't think that's the only way to confess sin or be honest about sin. I think we like that because it's a big emotional moment. But that's not necessary. And you are real. And for some of us, it's the first time we've heard other people say stuff and made us feel like, oh, I'm not the only one. But there is something to be said about being honest. I spend a lot of time talking to Pastor Harrop and Nathan Scott just because of my job. And I don't go in there and say, woe is me, here's my list of sins. But when we talk, our relationship is at a place where if I were to say something, it's not shocking him. Because we already talk, and he knows I'm a sinner, and I know he's a sinner, and Nathan Scott knows I'm a sinner, and I know Nathan Scott's a sinner. I mean, like, well, I know. So we're honest about it. I'm not in there confessing. I confessed to a guy in Seattle because he's far away from you people. But there's something about relationships when they're real. And let me go back to that church thing. As church people out in this world shining light, not only does it do a lot for one another as we deal honestly, I think it gives us the ability to show grace to people. Like, as opposed to the earlier model where I'm holding my stuff together, so you better hold your thing together, you better try really hard and try harder because I'm acting good, you better act good. And when someone messes up, it's like, psh, who am I to judge? I mess up too. What a relief it is to hear that you're not the only one. And for the non-believer who knows you, what a great way to knock down preconceived notions and barriers to the gospel, that you're not better than them, that you don't think you're better than them even. That's really the point. Because they think you think you're better than them, and that messes up a lot of stuff. That puts a real barrier to the good news. And when we own it, I'm convinced that we are actually preaching the gospel. When I say, man, I am selfish, I don't know that I want to go there because I don't trust myself, because I know my heart is dark, and I know that I'm greedy, whatever it may be. But thank God for I'm preaching the gospel. I'm preaching the good news. I'm celebrating. My celebration of my weaknesses and inabilities is a presentation of the gospel. So I'm going to close. I'm talking way too long. I just wonder what it would be like if we owned it a little bit more. Maybe you own it. Maybe you're completely transparent. Maybe you're too transparent and need to reel it back in. But that's usually not our problem. Our problem is we're still on a long first date with each other, afraid of what you're going to think. Because we forget. We forget that we are here because we're all forgiven. We are here because we all need forgiveness. And the end of that Psalm, chapter 32, he goes, shout for joy, celebrate being forgiven. Listen, if we gathered every Wednesday night and we knew the first thing on top of our mind was, man, we're gathered as people who are forgiven. We're reminded of the cross. We're reminded of what Jesus did. It wouldn't take like the third verse of a song to like get into worship. It's like I walked in worshipful. We can't start singing soon enough because I'm forgiven and I'm with people who are forgiven because they got issues and I got issues. But by the grace of God, he's changing us and making us and calling us to himself. I don't want you guys to live with the burden of trying to live and correct yourself and fix yourself and justify yourself, because I'm convinced you'll miss out on what the church could be, what the church should be. what your life out there with non-believers could and should be. Own it. And as you do, I believe, you proclaim the message of Jesus. You proclaim what this thing's all about. Let me pray. The band's going to come up. We're going to sing that song, Unending Love. Is that what it is? Endless Love. You mean so much. That's the wrong song. That's Endless Love. I don't even know how to sing that song correctly. Can we do this? Or are we missing too many people? What's that? We have everyone but Avery? That's cool. Let's do it. I just want to sing this song. It's just kind of an opportunity to celebrate. We'll break out into groups and talk. I might be crazy. I might be like delirious, and I'm praying and considering where it is we're going with this sermon series and what I was doing this week as I prepared for this message. Maybe you're like, dang, Jerome, I don't know what youth group you're pastoring, but we're completely authentic. Well, then I missed it. I was about 30. Like, I thought I was all about being transparent. In a lot of ways, I was transparent growing up. Authentic. Honest. But I was about 32 years old when I really began to get some of this stuff. Then those moments when I would normally feel guilty and I would normally feel really bad and I would punish myself thinking, well, I did that. I should feel bad for a while before I even dare to try to worship Jesus again because I'm not worthy. What's funny is those things just kept me down and struggling with the things I struggled with. Now I find myself messing up and catching myself and knowing it. And I can say, God, I need your grace. God, thank you for grace. I'm not taking it lightly. It's not his grace is making me, allowing me to do stuff and getting off scot-free. There's consequences to our sin, but I'll tell you what, I don't live down there anymore. You could walk in here with very little, like, spiritual excitement. I'm convinced of that. But if you really stop and focus on just the cross, not all the other things about being a Christian, just the cross, it's pretty hard to kind of keep a spiritually like flat-lined spirit. Just the cross. There's a lot of things that we do in church that have nothing to do with the cross, that have nothing to do with what Jesus has done, nothing to do with being forgiven. Not bad things per se. But may we be a youth ministry, a student ministry. May you be young people who in high school and as you leave this place on your college campuses that are people that focus on the cross. Not feeling like you need to hide, but owning it and saying, yeah, thank God for grace. Because nothing will change us more than actually admitting that we fall short and saying, God, I need you. That actually changes us because our hearts changed. Not outside. Ooh, I didn't read this, but Psalm 32, he talks about God's response is like, don't be like a stubborn mule who needs a bit and bridle to kind of force you to do something. If sin is a condition of the heart more than it is bad behavior, nothing changes our heart like the cross. Can you stand with me? Because this song is about the cross. It's about unfailing love. We're going to sing this. Then I'm going to close in prayer. Then we're going to go to groups.